Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by C.W.B. and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 11, Erebus and Selvig. Summary: Sherlock learns the story of Erebus and Selvig and gets a glimpse of true heartbreak. Sherlock focuses only on Erebus, unaware of the pack around him. He and Erebus stay near the edge of the flow, removed from the others, as Erebus shares the details of the life he had with Selvig. They stay there for a considerable arc of the sun across the sky, but will have to leave soon to finish the rest of the journey to the flow's mother, the Cassiopeia iceberg. Erebus speaks soft and low, and Sherlock's ears strain wide open. He leans forward too far, needing to correct himself as he threatens to topple over into the respected leader. It is not only the elder's private tone that captivates Sherlock, but the very words themselves, this offering of precious secrets. He tips toward Erebus over and over until the elder bird settles a wingtip on Sherlock's shoulder to hold him steady. Erebus's story began much as Sherlock's had, hatched to the elite, his father a Councilpang. He was a second son, like Sherlock, raised on Podeba Island, like Sherlock. From an early age, he had shown signs of being an excellent sports bird and hunter, and his parents had fostered his education and skill in every way possible. During his first summer dive, Erebus had gained further recognition for his adept foraging and had earned a seat at the Young Emperor Council, an initiative designed to prepare bright, promising pangs for future leadership roles. It was there he had met Selvig. The two emperors had hit it off immediately, and within a short period were spending all of their free time together. Erebus knew, he tells Sherlock, as soon as he met Selvig, that he had met his life partner. He does not go into detail, but much of Erebus's story rings true to Sherlock. He recognizes their exploits, their affection, their private world of touches and words and glances, in the one he shares with John. There are moments when Erebus resonates with such fondness and nostalgia while speaking of Selvig that Sherlock thinks he, or the elder, or both of them may melt into tears. Selvig, Erebus reminisces, was smart and funny and kind and caring.
He was handsome, so very handsome, he whispers into the air above Sherlock's head, a faraway look in his eyes. He was strong and fast and brave. He would fling himself into the face of danger to keep another peng safe, and loved a good race, a hunt, any type of challenge. He wasn't overly competitive, though. It took me ages to figure out he was letting me win most of our races because it made him happy to see me happy. He didn't mind losing. He was good-natured, easygoing. He had such a wonderful sense of humor, Sherlock. Never underestimate the power of a good long laugh, especially during difficult times. And there will be difficult times. But even at the end, when we knew he was dying, he would try to make me laugh.
Sherlock has never seen an adult Peng look so heartbroken. He does not consider himself a compassionate sort, or one possessing a particularly caring nature. But something deep inside him aches to make Erebus smile again, to remember happier times.
He sounds like a wonderful partner, sir. I wish I could have met him. Can you tell me about your courtship, perhaps?
Erebus chirps softly at the back of his throat and tosses his head back, as if to dislodge heavier thoughts.
It's a long story, young one. Are you sure you want to hear these ancient tales?
Sherlock assures him that he does, so Erebus continues. Erebus reached adult maturity before Selvig, but vowed to wait until the next season to call and bond in courtship. The couple had talked openly about their future. Neither of them were moved to have chicks, both preferring to spend as much time as possible in the open water, or trekking and exploring the ice that surrounded them. They both agreed, though, to uphold the tradition of calling for each other, mirroring each other in a show of unity, and finally, parading as a newly bonded couple in front of the colony. It wasn't until Erebus's parents began to question his lack of participation in the courtship rituals that he began to suspect obstacles in his future with Selvig. His parents, he explained to Sherlock, had assumed he would transition from his juvenile friendship with Selvig to an adult bonded relationship with a female. Erebus thought that everyone knew about and accepted his relationship with Selvig. They had never hid the nature of their love, never made a secret of their affection for each other. His parents, he soon came to understand, saw friendship and nothing more. No, they explained to him, a friendship with a male was fine, but it was time to court, to bond, to mate. It didn't matter to them that he was not the least bit interested in females, or that he didn't feel the need to reproduce, or that he was resolutely, irrefutably in love with Selvig and Selvig with him. The mating season came and went, and his parents had no choice but to stop badgering Erebus to find a mate. They continued, however, to fight about the eventuality through the winter and into the next summer. Erebus found some relief from the weight of their displeasure during his months at sea, but knew the next mating season, after migrating back to the island, would be difficult, if not impossible, to bear. That next winter, Selvig was ready to bond, and the two made plans to elope to a different colony before the migration back to Podaba, to a place where they hoped they would be accepted. Though his parents had kept a close eye on him during their time at sea, the pair thought it would be fairly easy to slip away under cover of night. By morning, they'd have put a vast expanse of sea between them and their parents, and it would be too late for anyone to intervene. They arranged to meet at a specific place on the ice floe the group had been using as a diving spot, and counted down the days. From there, they would swim to the Shackleton Shelf, that massive formation of ice clinging to the easternmost edge of the continent. Erebus stops now and sighs. He looks out over the rippling water and scans the never-ending sky.
"We'll be leaving soon, young Sherlock. Perhaps I should save the rest for another time."
Sherlock shakes his head, and his whole body follows the movement, his fluff and feathers rustling, his wings fluttering. He trills in impatience and says,
"Elder Erebus, please, just tell me now before we need to leave. Did you make it? Did you and Selvig make it to the shelf?"
Erebus smiles down at him, a resigned set to his bill.
"No, son. No, we did not. Selvig's parents had discovered our plan, probably from a peer sent to spy on us. They took him before the time we were to meet and left. I waited until dawn. I watched as the water changed from black to purple to gray to blue, and when he didn't come, I knew."
Sherlock's distress is palpable, his trill is anxious, and other pangs nearby look over in curiosity. If he thought he knew sadness before, if he thought he knew separation, he knew nothing. He will see John later today if all goes well, but Erebus and Selvig. He moves closer to the elder, close enough to touch, and cranes his head back to whisper, not out of privacy, but sorrow.
How long until you saw each other again?
6 winters, Sherlock. 6 very long winters.
Sherlock slumps down onto his haunches and closes his eyes. 6 winters! He hasn't even seen his second winter. Sherlock, who can see the age of a pang in the length of his gait, who can predict the movement of krill pods by the direction of the clouds, who can tell you what you ate for breakfast by the residue on your bill, cannot fathom 6 winters without John.
"Sherlock, son, listen. I do not tell you our story to upset you, though it certainly was a difficult time for both of us. I tell you the tale so that you can prepare. Times are different now. You and John may not face the same adversity that Selvig and I did. Your parents are loving, open, intelligent beings. They have not pushed Mycroft to mate. They are letting him take his own path. But there are others on the council and beyond who are very set in their ways and who may cause trouble for you when it is your time. They may not do so, of course. I cannot say definitively, but you need to look to your future and be ready. Sherlock nods. He has been naive to think that he and John could stay together forever with no resistance, no questions, no conflict. Not even Korora, the beloved goddess, was able to overcome the ignorance of small minds and hard hearts.
Thank you, Elder Erebus. Your story has a happy ending, I know it does, because you said Selvig was your mate. You found each other again after those 6 winters, and you were able to stay together. That's not the point of your story, though, is it? The point is to know what I may come up against in the future. Tell me, though, how did you know about my feelings for John? Does everyone know?
Erebus laughs and shakes his head.
Look around you, Sherlock. We are a self-centered bunch, interested in ourselves, our mates, our next meal. We tend to see that which we know, that which has marked us in some way. Another bird wouldn't think twice about your friendship with John. I noticed because it put me in mind of myself and Selvig when we were young. Love isn't invisible, Sherlock, not if you look for it.
Do you think John loves me?
Do you?
Sherlock feels his heart jump around in his chest. John does, doesn't he? Hasn't he said as much? Have any of those touches and gestures been misunderstood? No, it's not possible. Sherlock would know, wouldn't he?
I think so. I think he does.
Have you asked him?
No, but that's... I'm not sure...
It's okay, it's all right, young sir. I wasn't implying that you should have done. You can, though. You can speak directly to him. In fact, it's best that you do. Maybe not now, when you still have these winters of youth ahead of you. But in time, when decisions must be made, do not be afraid to speak your mind.
Sherlock hears Olive call for him then, and in a rush of spontaneous affection, he leans into Erebus and rubs the top of his head under the taller bird's chin. Erebus wraps his wings around Sherlock and gives him a brief but strong embrace and says,
"Let me know how I can help you, and don't forget about our foraging experiment. We have work to do."
"I won't forget,"
Sherlock calls back over his shoulder, moving toward his mother's call.
"I won't forget anything."
He takes his place in the line forming near the edge of the floe, between his mother and father, and they inch their way toward the water, ready to resume this leg of their trip. As he splashes into the deep blue, he looks back and sees Erebus dive into the water behind them, graceful despite his age. Graceful, but alone.